Now, today is the first edition of a new feature on managing your money. Once a month on a Thursday, we're going to bring you expert advice on topical issues around your personal finances. It's going to range from everything from the different kinds of investments to insurance cover, pension funds, your savings options, all that kind of stuff. But I'm mindful, as I say all of that, that this is a country where many people struggle to make it to the end of the month, full stop. The concept of saving, of financial planning, might seem impossible and it might seem daunting. But it is crucial that we think about it and talk about it. And I think a lot of the avoidance of the discussion comes from a place of anxiety, that we just don't understand the basic concepts and terms. So I thought, to start us off on our first segment, we're really going to go quite broad. And I've asked Kirsty Scully to take some of the broad concepts and help us understand the kinds of conversations we should be having when we meet with a financial planner. She knows this very well because she's herself a certified financial planner at Core Wealth here in Cape Town. Kirsty, it's lovely to have you back on the show again. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Pippa. Always lovely to be here with you.
It's been far too long, so welcome back. I said the word anxiety. I think obviously outright fear might be a better term. A lot of people don't ever take that first step of meeting with a financial planner because they don't think they're going to even understand what we talk about. So how do you make the most of that meeting if you are coming from a place of not having any kind of financial sort of background?
Well, I think the most important thing is that you meet with the right person.
Yeah.
And then, of course, well, how are we going to find the right person? That's
yes,
going to be the next question that comes. So I always say to people, chat to your friends, chat to your family, who are they dealing with? Who do they feel would suit you as a person? Because it's got to be somebody that you gel with. It's got to be somebody you feel absolutely open towards and that you have that ability to sort of banter as such, because there's got to be a lot of questions and you're going to have to reveal quite a lot of information to that person.
Yeah.
But at the same time, always meet with a certified financial planner, because a certified financial planner is the person with the highest qualification.
Okay.
So I would really highly recommend that. And if you can't find one through your friends, perhaps go onto the website for the Financial Planning Institute of Southern Africa, and there's a list of financial planners.
Okay, so if you have no contacts, no referrals whatsoever, the Financial Planning Institute of Southern Africa will have a list of the people who are certified. I mean, what sort of qualification is that? Can you explain?
Well, look, it's a university qualification. Okay. So it is it's a post-grad qualification. So most of them would have had done some sort of undergrad degree and then gone on to do the post-grad, which is a financial planning qualification. But what it does is it meets with some really, really rigorous international competency and ethical requirements.
Okay.
And then in addition, they also have to be a member of a SACWA registered, like a financial plan, something like the Financial Planning Institute, an organization like that. So it really is, it's not just somebody who's going to go and sell you a product, which it could be like a broker.
I think a lot of people feel hesitant because they think they're just going to try and flog me something that their particular company wants me to buy.
So correct.
Skeptical.
It's somebody who's there to give you advice. And again, that actually, exactly what you're saying brings me to another point. Try and deal with somebody who's independent, so that they don't have to sell you something from their company as such.
Okay. Now, when we talk about a financial plan, what should it cover, Kirsty?
It can cover a very wide range of things. I know when I do a financial plan for a client, we're probably looking at maybe 25 pages or so. So it's really extensive.
Okay.
And I always said, it always starts a bit at a morbid stage, because what we do is we talk about death first.
Yep.
What's going to happen if you pass away? What needs to be paid for? What liabilities do you have? Or will there be any capital gains tax? Or will there be a estate duty? Or what will your executor's fees be? Those sorts of things. So we actually talk about that, and we talk about what's going to happen for your family financially in the event of your death. So it's quite a wide range of things as far as the death goes. But we also look at other things. If you're still alive and say, for example, something happens to you, you can't work, you're either too sick, or maybe you've been in a terrible accident and you're unable to, maybe you've broken a leg, you can't work, or maybe you're permanently disabled. We need to put a structure together to ensure that there will be an income for you in the event that you can't work.
I'm going to cite a personal example here that I had someone say to me when I had my kids and became a mom for the first time. Think about what would happen to them if something happened to you. It's not just about saying I would need to replace my salary if I couldn't go to work. Who would do the school lift if you were not able to drive the car anymore? You would have to hire somebody to do that for you. Who would look after them at night if you were in hospital for a long stretch, etc.? All those kinds of questions that just hadn't crossed my mind. Or correct. If you had, you hadn't thought about in depth financially what that actually would mean for you. Would that extend, Kirsty, that conversation to what happens to you if I get sick? If I get a disease of some sort?
Yes, yeah. With a financial plan, they should, your financial planner should also cover dread disease. Okay. So that would be a case of what would happen if I got a dread disease. Now, if I look at the most commonly most common dread diseases, I would say, we'd be looking at cancer, at a heart attack, or stroke. Those are kind of your top three that get paid out. Yeah. And so what dread disease does is it pays out a lump sum of money for you to pay for any expenses which your medical aid's not going to be paying for.
Okay. Mm. While you're mentioning that, I must just, if I may divert for a second, mention on the subject of cancer, we actually have two shows lined up next week that are dealing specifically with this issue. Tuesday, we are doing a very close focus on breast cancer. And then on Thursday, we're going to have exactly this conversation. Financial planning, what medical aids will and won't cover, treatment options and what they cost. All of those kinds of questions about cancer more broadly are going to be tackled on Thursday next week. So I just want to give you some advance warning that those conversations will be happening. And if there is a particular question in those veins that you would like to hear put to the guests, you're very welcome to mail me in advance on pippah@capetalk.co.za. All right, so let's get back for now, though, to Kirsty Scully. When we talk about dread disease cover, how much is enough? Yeah. Does it depend on how many dependents you have? What else?
It's always it's a bit of like how long is a piece of string? Yeah. You know, what we generally do is we recommend between 750,000 rand and 1 million rand's worth of dread disease cover, and that is generally suitable. We've done all the work behind the scenes. I've seen how much gets paid by the medical aids. You know, we've looked at our own clients and all that sort of thing, and we're quite competent, quite happy on that and that sort of amount of money. But remember, then what's going to happen is a lump sum will get paid out to you, and it's for you to decide what you do with that. So it could be to pay for any medical expenses that weren't covered by your medical aid, but it could also be something else. For example, if you got cancer and you're not well enough to go to work, you might need a nurse at home to actually look after you. Now, I can assure you the medical aid's not going to pay for that. So that would be paid, that you could use your dread disease cover to pay that out. So it's quite useful. But the point is you get to decide what you spend that on.
Okay. So if you felt, for example, you needed counseling to help you through the emotional journey of dealing with a cancer diagnosis, you could dip into it.
You could use it for that. Like that as well. Absolutely. You could pay your bond off it. Whatever you want to do with it, you know.
Yes. I've got a lovely story. The lady who's joining me next week had a little bit left over and decided that the most important thing she needed was a holiday at the end of her chemo.
Good
and that's
for her.
What she did with the last little bit. And I just loved it. Really just helped spark a new lease on life for her. Okay, so that's really important. The dread disease cover, something that you must talk about, particularly with somebody who knows what the medical aids are and aren't going to cover, because there are some surprises hidden in there if you're not going in with, informed. While we're talking about the medical aids, is that something you can discuss with a financial planner?
Absolutely.
Which one you should be on, what kind of plan?
Correct. Yeah. Now, most financial planners will have a good idea about medical aids. They don't all have top knowledge about them, because some of them don't actually market them at all.
Okay.
But like, for example, within my organization, we have a medical aid specialist.
Okay.
And that's all she does. So she knows those medical aids intimately, about which is the most suitable. So they would look at you and they'll say, well, what have you got, children, or don't you have children, or do you have somebody in the family who's got a chronic illness? And then they'll make a decision as to which is the most suitable thing. The other point that you've got to look at with medical aid is decide, do you want something that is just a hospital plan? So that's obviously going to be on the cheaper end of the scale. It's only going to pay for in hospital. Or do you want something that will pay for those day-to-day visits, when you got flu and you go to your GP, when you go to the gynae, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's quite a big difference in making that decision as to what you actually need, what is suitable.
Okay. That is so important. And to have the opportunity to speak to somebody who knows all the different products that are out there is quite special, because there's so many of them.
Yes.
And as you say, tailor-making it to get the best value for money that you need is really important. How soon should you start these conversations, Kirsty? Particularly on medical aid. I mean, many of us may, if you're lucky enough to have grown up in a family where your parents had medical aid, you can stay on it for as long as until you start your first job. But
well, people often ask me, what is the most important thing I need to be spending my money on? You know, we don't have endless money. And I always say the first thing is your medical aid. Because if you don't have a medical aid and you're in a major accident or something, all your savings can be gone within a day. So I actually think that is number one priority. But the other thing that I think is very important to know is that if you're not on a medical aid by the age of 35 and you then at a later stage want to go on, you will most likely have a late joinal penalty for the rest of your life. life. So if you hear nothing other than from me today, just know, please be on a medical aid by the age of 35.
So those late joiner penalties might apply for the remainder of your life. I knew that they were there when you joined. I didn't realize they could carry on for the entirety.
Correct, they can do for the rest of your life.
So important to know that. So before the age of 35. When we talk about medical aid, a lot of people find the medical aid, some of the plans don't stretch far enough. They might opt for gap cover. Kirsty, can you just talk to us a little bit about what that is and how?
So yeah, gap cover is there to pay the difference. That word's very important. Difference between what the doctor, what the specialist charges you, and what the medical aid pays. So for example, maybe you go and see a gynae and she does an operation on you, and she says, "Well, my bill is going to be 15,000 rand," and your medical aid says, "Oh, well, sorry, we're only paying 5,000." So now there's a difference of 10,000. Yeah. That is for your account. If you've got gap cover and you're in hospital for that operation, yes, then the gap cover will cover that difference.
Okay.
So, and gap cover is actually very reasonable. It costs around about 450 rand a month for a family membership. So, I think it's very reasonable.
Considering what you're saving yourself potentially,
because
they are increasing, particularly in some fields, and gynecology is one, I know, where there's increasingly a big gap between what the medical aids will pay and what the private doctors certainly are charging. And we know there are good reasons for their fees going up to do with malpractice insurance, et cetera. Yeah. But it is potentially a huge chasm of a difference. So important to know about. Okay. The one thing we haven't touched on, which we must mention, is retirement planning. Mm. That's obviously got to be a crucial part of any financial plan.
I find most people come to see us because they want to talk about retirement planning. Yes. So it is number one. And a good financial planner will say, well, how much have you already saved? What do you want to live on? How much do you want to live on when you're retired? And that will involve working on your budget now.
Yeah.
Okay. And then take into consideration how many years you've still got until retirement. And that will give them an idea of how much you need to be saving. And they'll put something together for you.
And I mean, assuming they will help you do the sums of, you currently live on X.
Yes.
If you want to continue to live at the current standard of living.
Correct.
In 20 years from now, you will need to have X plus however many percent in terms of inflationary growth.
That is why your financial planner needs to know exactly what goes into your budget on a monthly basis.
You're assuming that everybody has a budget on a monthly basis, Kirsty. Maybe that's a first step we should have mentioned before you get to the financial planner. Do you need to have drawn up a good schedule of what you spend every month on what?
Well, I always say to people, before you come to see me, spend your time doing your financial plan, because at least your budget.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if you're spending my time doing it, we're actually wasting time. It's costing you money to just literally draw up your budget. So yes, do your homework before you see a financial plan and know what it costs you to live on a monthly basis. And that will give them a very good indication of what to save so as to maintain that same standard of living when you retire.
Okay. We haven't talked about saving for the nice to haves.
Yes.
We've spoken about a lot of essentials here, but if somebody has the goal of one day, I want to go on an overseas trip when it's my 20th wedding anniversary, or I've just become a parent, I want my child to be able to go to university. Should that be part of the conversation?
Absolutely.
As well?
And it generally would be. Okay. A financial planner will look, what have you got, kids? Oh, what grade? Oh, okay. Your child's in grade 8. Right. We've got another 5 years to go until university. You need to be saving this amount, for example. Or, oh, you want to do a family overseas trip or a local trip, whatever it is.
Yeah.
How much do you need to save? And they'll put that into place to organize it.
Okay. It is quite a complex beast. You can understand why people feel a little bit scared and daunted by the prospect, because a good financial planner, half of the skill is in helping people to understand these concepts in layman's terms.
Correct. And make it down to earth. Make it understandable and easy.
So, any tips then, just in the minute or two we've got left, you've mentioned the homework of doing and drafting your own budget and having a good sense and honest sense of where you spend your money every month before you book that appointment. Any other suggestions?
Yeah. I think just be really, really honest with your financial planner. Show exactly what your expenses are, where you're spending your money on a monthly basis. Because if you don't do that, it's like telling half a story and you're not going to benefit. So that's probably the best thing. But also to deal with somebody who's independent, because if you're dealing with an independent person, especially a fee-based person, they're going to go through what it is that you require without being tempted to, as I say, sort of inverted commas, sell you something.
Yes.
We don't want that, because that is not the way
push
to
push you in a particular
things.
Direction.
Correct.
Because it is
yeah.
a particular yeah. company rather yeah. than because it is the product that best
Correct.
Suits you.
Yeah.
Okay. I know a financial plan is a fluid thing. It needs to be revisited. How often should you revisit it?
At least once a year. Once a year, I would say, and I meet with my clients once a year to go through that, to see if there are any changes. But at the same time, always, if there are changes in your life, if there's a death, if there's a new baby, if there's a new home that you're thinking of, even buying a new car, speak to your financial planner about it, because they can give you a lot of information.
Including probably, do they delve into the area of tax breaks? If you want to buy a new car, will they advise you on how to do it most tax effectively?
Of course, that's what they're there to do.
Kirsty, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. I just want to repeat the one important thing Kirsty said at the beginning of this conversation. Always look for a certified financial planner. And if you are not connected to one through recommendations from people that you know and trust, you can visit the Financial Planning Institute of Southern Africa to find a list of people who are verified certified financial planners. In Kirsty's case, you can call Core Wealth, which is where she is based. Kirsty, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thanks,
really appreciate it. And a conversation to be continued at a later date in Manage Your Money.